Welcome to Follow Our Lead, the podcast that dives deep into the stories of leadership excellence and the people who define it. In today's episode, I'm thrilled to welcome Sheldon Roemer, CEO and executive producer of This Is It Network, a global, female, minority-owned digital streaming platform. Sheldon hosts a daily talk show that shares the stories of inspiring female leaders, executives, and entrepreneurs. Sheldon is also the author of Scream Your Dream, 66 Lessons to Build Your Personal Brand. She provides tangible steps you can take to shape your online presence. Sheldon also works with business owners to build their brand, tell their story, and craft their message. In addition, she hosts workshops, is a keynote speaker, and MCs and moderates various events. Join us as Sheldon shares her journey, her challenges, and her unwavering commitment to inspiring others through the art of storytelling and the power of digital media. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Bars Gowie, Amon, and Foltz, a Pennsylvania-based accounting firm that exemplifies leadership in tax, audit, and advisory services for businesses.
I am so excited to have you. This is such an honor as a marketing professional. I feel like I am fangirling so hard right now. But I want to just dive right in. Yeah. So I want to talk about your story.
Okay.
You know, you're the one who's always listening to everyone else's story. So now I want to hear your story.
Thank you.
Starting from the very beginning.
Okay.
All the way from the beginning, I know you were born in Sierra Leone, West Africa.
I was.
You went from that to living in the United States, being a CEO, an entrepreneur, an author, a mom, an award winner.
Yeah.
The list goes on.
All the things. And I think that being from West Africa, coming from my foundation has always been so strong, you know, like having a strong foundation of knowing who I am and knowing where I'm from, but also the power to like go explore truly what makes me unique. I'm unique I'm one of four. And so I'm a middle child, which is not a surprise to anybody who's ever met me. And so understanding where I am uniquely, they're heavily academic and brilliant. My siblings are brilliant. My parents are brilliant. But academics was really where they really shined. I mean, they all have great personalities and are so much fun. We're all so much fun. But I never really saw myself thriving the academic space. It's just kind of funny that I'm an adjunct professor now and then I teach all these courses. But my personality was always big, even when I was really young. And they always knew that. And they always really allowed for me to be that class clown, to be that family, the one person in the family that gives the speeches, the one person that MCs the holiday events. They allowed for that to happen. And so I always went after those pursuits. I grew up watching and loving talk shows. My mom would record talk shows, just to age myself. My mom would record talk shows and I would come home and we would just watch them together. And I was just fascinated by telling stories and listening as much as talking. And it was just a really cool thing to be able to study that. I went to LaSalle University in the Philadelphia area. I played Division I field hockey and, you know, ran track for a very short time there. And so being an athlete paired with being an immigrant, paired with all of those things was just hard work, determination. And that allowed for me to be an entrepreneur as if I was really setting myself up to struggle, as if I was setting myself up to really know how to fail, to know how to start over, to know how to win, to know how to go into a room being the only one or the only one who wanted what it is that I wanted. So I really was grounded. And I know a lot of people aren't necessarily as grounded and aren't fortunate enough to have that, you know, foundation. But I was very fortunate enough to have that foundation paired with the love of talking and then paired with some gross ambition. You mix that all together and then here I am. And so really I studied media and communications at LaSalle. Always wanted to be on television. Again, to age myself, I wanted to be on MTV, you know, when they really played videos. Remember that?
I do.
Right? And I wanted to like be the VJ on Spring Break in like a bikini being like, next up on stage, Eminem. Like that was like my ideal goal. Got derailed, you know, just with trying to eat, you know, got into sales and cold calling and, you know, selling advertising space and then helping people promote parties. It was the height of the .com space after I graduated. And so helping a lot of my colleagues and friends and buddies like launch their .coms. And that I began to understand, okay, I'm going to invite people to an event. There's no one here. And then because I invited them, someone came. Like the action marketing, living advertising, living promotions just lit me up. Like I'm going to make something up. I'm going to send out a JPEG. Somebody, you know, and it's going to go out into the world. And then there's a line of people that got dressed and parked their car and bought the drinks and did all the things simply because I asked them to, simply because I communicated that. You know, once I got a taste of that, I knew that this is a space that I needed to be in. So I really paired my love of media and communications, my foundation, my ambition. I paired that all together. And you know, here I am just really telling stories every day and loving every minute of it.
So what you do is so unique with This Is It Network. It's so unique. Wild. So how did you kind of, so tell us what This Is It Network is and how did you get the idea for filling such a crucial gap in the market?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So in 2009, I started IG Creative, which is in essence the parent brand of This Is It Network. And so IG Creative was a PR, marketing, and digital firm, right? So we did publicity, advertising, events, graphic design, web design, social media. That was what we did. And we primarily did that for small business owners. And those small business owners tended to be solely women. And it was the cupcake lady and the bracelet gal and the t-shirt, you know, girl and the people that were really building things independently. And what we would do is we would get them ready for media opportunities such as this, get them ready for Fox Good Day, get them ready for the Today Show, get them ready for local media. And what I saw, because I'm so much of an extrovert, if you haven't noticed, because I'm so much of an extrovert, it was so surprising that these individuals who dedicated their lives to their skill set could not part their lips to say why somebody should buy their cupcake versus somebody else's, why somebody should buy their jewelry versus someone else's. And it wasn't the marketing part that we executed that was difficult. It was getting them to be able to say why they were worthy of attention. And it just broke my heart. As somebody who's overly enthusiastic about just about everything, to see somebody dedicate, remortgage their house for what it is that they love and what it is that they were good at. And so what we would do is we would practice in the office. I would pretend to be on spring break on MTV. I would turn my conference room into a small studio. We would interview I would interview my clients, and I physically saw something change. I have a certain energy about me that allows for hopefully for people to feel comfortable. And so when people are in a comfortable space, they tend to let their guard down physically, shoulders drop, and they tell me about their grandmother's recipe. They tell me why they started the jewelry company. They told me they were an ex-lawyer that now is a fitness expert, right? They tell me these things because they're in a safe place. They're not feeling as if I'm not paying attention, or I'm going to say, oh, now to the weather, right? It's very much, I'm going to give you space and I'm going to give you time. And in exchange, you're going to give me honesty and authenticity. And I, at that moment, I was like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. And at that moment, I said, this is it. And that's why I called it that. And this is it. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing anything else. This is what I'm doing. And we slowly built it from there.
I mean, that's absolutely incredible. But how do you go from taking that idea?
Yeah.
And making it into a business. Sure. It's no easy feat.
No, it's a work in progress, my dear, dear friend. And it wasn't really a business at first. And just most recently did we begin to look at it in a more strategic way. At the beginning, I was just interviewing my clients and again, preparing them. And we would record it and be able to utilize that content, be able to push that content out. Then colleagues would send me, you know, their clients for media training or just to practice, right? So it was a very loose thing. I'd go to an opening of a tin can and be like, hello, everybody. How's everybody doing? And I just loved it so much that I just saw it as an extension of IG Creative and not a separate entity all to itself. As we began determining, you know, What are the pieces of content that are out there? What are the outlets that are out there regionally and even globally? There wasn't so much for what I call remarkable women. There isn't a place where the ambitious woman can go and find content to feel really good and not alone. We're a lot, you know, ambitious women. Like we are balancing a lot of things. Like I have two children. I am married. I have a career. I have, you know, we're in that sandwich generation. I have two 78-year-old parents that I love so much. And we're balancing all of that in the palm of our hands, unapologetically, not complaining, right? And so is there a place that doesn't shush me? Is there a place that doesn't say I'm too much? Is there a place that doesn't, you know, that rewards me for my ambition as opposed to try to muffle it? And so I knew that we could do that by telling the stories of other remarkable women who are really doing wonderful work, you know, by creating their businesses. And so it was really one step at a time. It organically grew. More people invited us into their lives. They started watching us, and it's completely self-funded. So there is no big parent company, you know, and it's really been a labor of love, knowing that there's a void in this market, knowing that in the market of remarkable women, for us to tell these stories. So it's just grown. And then we're so grateful for the partners that are supporting us, and the brands that are like, yeah, we want to talk to more women between the ages of 30 and 55. They're spending some money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're spending money on their kids. They're spending money on their parents. They're spending money on themselves with some overpriced leggings, right? So like, mm-hmm. how do we encourage brands to support our efforts? And that's really what we've been working on.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that in a second. Before we get there, though, I'm so curious, why not be on YouTube or have a podcast? Why start the network?
For sure. And so for me, I'm a visual person. Video has always been, again, going back to that MTV kind of scenario, always
my
loved.
My kind of girl.
Right. Always loved, you know, being in front of the camera. It kind of lights me up. I always loved the idea of even editing and putting that content together. So video has always been our main focus. We do have an editorial piece of what it is that we do, and events. So how do we pair online with offline is really what we really pride ourselves in doing. And so one of the things that Taquan Allen, who's been working with me for, oh my gosh, so much time now. He's our production director. He's been absolutely wonderful. And even when we first began, you know, we were trying to figure out where this needs to live. You know, where does it need to live? How do we tell the story that in a place that it makes sense? You know, can we go viral? You know, and one of the things that was most important is that, you know, why don't we just find the people that make the most sense for us? Why? It doesn't have to be a million people. It just needs to be the right people. Mm-hmm. And how do we create a space that they can come to? We could have done one of two things in life, right? You can wait or you can build, right? And I think it's the same energy. I could have waited and sent audition tapes in to MTV or Netflix or whoever it is, or, you know, and asked for permission, or I could just slowly have built it myself. And so some of the women who have watched us since its inception. And we're really successful in building it independently. Now, do we use other social media platforms to support our conversations? Absolutely. We're on anything that you can follow us on to be able to do that. We're not on everything, but we're on a lot to really allow for our audience to find us where they need us and then bounce it back to our platform. So we see social media as tools that you use in order to help us gain more visibility. But our goal is always to have a home where all of our content lives, mm-hmm. Regardless of what Mark Zuckerberg chooses to do on day to day, or not be a prisoner of an algorithm, you know, and just really have our own space where we can hold our own content and conversations.
So you mentioned something before about generating revenue. That's the million-dollar question with social media. Everyone wants to know, how are you making money? How are you doing it? How has your business model allowed for you to monetize? Because starting a network, especially when you started it, I think, in what, 2013?
Yeah, 2014.
So that was before TikTok, or maybe right as it just got started.
Yeah.
Before Instagram.
Yeah.
Well before Instagram.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you...
All around the same scenarios. And I have to tell you, it was difficult. I mean, and still to... extent, it's a lift. It's not an easy thing by any stretch of the imagination. We did before we made, right? So like, we did so much before we made a dollar. And as frustrating as that may have been to my team, as frustrating as it may have been to myself and to my finances, you know, because it is self-funded, I knew that we had to produce content and create consistency and loyalty and build, you know, a voice of our own before we could ask brands to support what we've got going on. We are now on the hunt, you know, for brands that work. And it's more quality versus quantity. Because we're self-funded, it doesn't take a lot to keep us going. So being able to select which brands make the most sense, which partners make the most sense for what we got going on. Traditional advertising on our platform is something that we look for. Advertisers is what we look for. We also really pride ourselves on content creation, which is the ability to help brands create unique content. User-generated content is big and huge right now, user-generated content and UGC, and being a third party that can create that, that tells organic stories by Remarkable Women for Remarkable Women is a very unique place to be, right? Larger agencies, larger brands don't necessarily have the teams to be able to be taking smartphones out and you know, talking about pizza slices and those types of things or best ways to work out. We can do that and be a little bit more, you know, flexible in with deadlines, trending topics. We can be get a call today and get a piece of content out within the afternoon, where usually that's part of a larger ad deck, right? That was pitched and then it took time. And then we are figuring out what to do for summer. In the winter, you don't have the time in such a digital landscape to do that. So we are able to be flexible with larger brands and give them the content they need in the moment.
I mean, it's so smart and it's so exciting. It's so exciting that there's something out there that can really showcase the voices of people that you might not hear about all
the
time.
Most likely you don't.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I think that there's something, if I can just say, like, I grew up on these talk shows. And when I grew up on talk shows, and I'm, again, aging myself for those that are listening and even watching, it was not only Oprah, but it was Sally, Jesse, Raphael, and it was Donahue, and it was Montel, Jordan. It was like all of these people. It was all of these different people that were creating these stories and telling these stories. And the people that sat on their couches weren't famous. Mm. The people that sat on their couches got notoriety after they sat on the couch. Now in the talk show space, you don't get to sit on the couch until you're famous. Mm. And so there needs to be a place where these stories are being told. There's a huge group of people who are doing remarkable things that don't have places in an organized place to tell their story. And so we're really filling that talk show void that was in the 90s and in the 80s that really allowed for people to really focus on educational entertainment. We were educating people about what's going on in the world, what's going on in their state, what's going on around the country, and then elevating their voice from there. So it's really exciting. It's like a treasure hunt, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think I've read you've had over 1,000 different guests on your network.
Yeah, I'm a crazy
person. So I'm curious, like, what does the behind the scenes process look like? I mean, for me, I interview eight guests a year, okay? And I can barely take the eight guests I have. So how do you do the research and, you know, figuring out how to keep the conversation engaging?
Yeah.
I mean, because sometimes it's hard to engage with people if they're not super engaging back with you, you know?
It is. I'm a little spoiled because of the way my energy works, and I'm slightly nosy. You know, I'm just inquisitive. I'm nosy. I'm like, tell me more. Like, right. And I genuinely care. Right. And as do you, I can just tell. And when you're sitting with somebody and you genuinely care, the conversation goes in such a great way. If you're waiting for a commercial break or you're not really engaged, and we all know the difference. We know the difference between somebody who sits with us and really wants to hear what we have to say and somebody who's just like, okay, what do you do again? And it's really not interesting. And I have to be really honest. I'm not, you know, I do research on the people that I talk to, but I really let them talk to me. Mm-hmm. I let them tell me what they want to tell me as opposed to what I need to know. What do I need to know if they don't want to tell me, right? And I think that it's really about, you know, how do I give them space? There's no one who stopped working 40 hours a week to work 90 hours a week that isn't driven to do so. And can I give them an opportunity to finally tell people why they decided to do that? To finally be honest about what's driving them to write, you know, their notes down in the middle of the night or to write a plan down in a napkin when you're at a bar, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you choosing to do that? You're driven to do that. And I don't think there's enough places that talk about that drive. I don't think that there's enough places that reward you for that ambition. And we just really want, I just really want to make sure that happens. And so, you know, the prepping is more just out of curiosity. I'm a very curious person. I want to see how things work. I was teasing with a friend. I was like, I don't really do anything. I just talk about what other people do. And that's really super fun. Mm-hmm. It really comes down to me just really caring about what the other person thinks, why they think it, you know, and that's why the content that I put out is just so authentic, in my opinion, and just comes off that way.
And it also feels like, I mean, I've watched the network. I've watched you on social media.
Yeah.
you don't come off scripted in any way. You come off so elegant and poised. And
thank you.
I feel like for me, it takes me a while to be prepared. I'm not that great on my feet. I need to really prepare and practice.
Yeah.
So how do you think you've gotten so good kind of on your toes like that?
Fair. Again, that I'm a natural extrovert, but I don't prep, which is a kind of crazy thing. Even when you emailed me and you're like, oh, send you the questions. I'm like, say what you want, like at the end of the day. And I really pride myself on that. I mean, I think that I get more nervous when I have to prepare, right? Mm-hmm. Teleprompters are a tough go for me. Like, I'd rather just sit and be natural. I also believe everything that I say. I might not know everything, which is I'm very comfortable in the fact that I don't know everything. I know what I know and I know what I don't know. But I'm coming to you always authentic. It's better when I'm not scripted, because it's coming from my heart and it's coming from the position that I'm in. I'm, again, a forever learner and a forever student. And so the content that I share online or otherwise is really coming from a place of like, this is what I feel in this moment. I know that other people feel the same way. I'm not trying to convince you, but I'm trying to support you. And it's just been really fun to be that and do that and to be that space and to really share, I guess, my enthusiasm, which you'd think that a lot more people online or otherwise are enthusiastic. They're just not. They're just not positive people. One of the things that somebody had asked me before was like, how are you so positive all the time? And I'm like, I'm not. Positivity for me is a practice. It's something that you work on as if you were going on a treadmill every day. Like, life is not good all of the time, but it's how you react to what life is that makes a difference. And I'm strong in my positivity. I work on it every day. And that's the content that I share. Yeah.
Seems like some people who come online and they're really positive come off inauthentic. Like, it doesn't seem real.
Right.
And the other problem is, especially with social media and people who are trying to build their brands, we've kind of, I mentioned this briefly before we started, but sometimes people risk sounding corny or cheesy. I mean, I think we've all seen like the influencer flop, you know, we've all been there.
What do they call it? Cringy?
Yeah, it's cringy. So how do you advise people to be authentic and self-aware while also being cognizant of what they're trying to showcase?
Yeah. I think it's practice. I mean, I think that if you look at any like major, you know, let's call them GOATs, right? Greatest of all time athletes, Serena Williams and Simone Biles, let's just say. Serena at her height and Simone now, they still practice. Mm. They practice every day. They are gifted. They are the winners in most cases of everything in which they touch, but they still practice religiously. And I think that if you want to find your voice, you have to practice using it. Right. And I think that a lot of people just assume that because it's social media, because people are influencers, because they're, you know, in the comfort of their own home, in their pajamas, et cetera, that it's easy. It's a heavy lift. You're giving of yourself. And if you don't know who you are, it's hard to give of yourself. Right. It's hard for you to find your voice when you are not familiar with it, when you're not even comfortable in it, you know, and we can. And the majority of people can tell when you're pretending. The majority of people can tell, even if it's comforting, that you're not being authentic. It's exhausting to give of yourself. And not everybody is equipped to be able to do that. And I think that if we have a little bit more patience with ourselves, the influencers and content creators that we love, if you go back to their first video, it's probably not as fluid. It's probably not as comfortable. The more that they practice and hone in, they say, that didn't sound like me. Or, oh, I don't want to sound like that again. And you have to give it a try and you have to do it. So if I do anything, I practice talking on a regular basis. So I'm constantly communicating. I'm constantly working on my voice. And hopefully that's helped and it resonates with people when they see me.
I mean, so I'm just thinking about myself here because I'm like, oh, I could learn so much from her about this podcast. I'm like, oh, but even for me, like when I prepare, my preparation is that I pretend like the person is sitting there and I read the questions to them. And I just keep repeating it over and over again in hopes that it becomes more fluid.
For sure.
And then when I'm having the conversation, I have my, you know, my questions that I know I'm going to try to ask.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the conversation doesn't flow in the way that you initially thought. So I guess for me, I have trouble kind of pivoting. You know, you have to do a lot of pivoting in your in your role.
Yeah.
So I guess for me, that's where I get kind of tripped up.
Yeah.
In the pivot.
And I mean, I guess piece of advice, if you're asking, is, you know, use the questions as a guide, not as a rule, right? Okay. So allow for my answer to be the next question, right? Allow for it to be a conversation, because I think that that's what people love more than all things. I mean, the real true interviewers, I love Oprah. She leans in and she listens. I love Howard Stern.
Okay.
I love Howard Stern. And it's a very interesting space because they're two different types of interviewers, but they listen to what the person, oh, really? And they ask a question based on the answer. And that's really part of it. It's really part of being a participant, not just a moderator. And those conversations are just always so great. I mean, both of them are legends in what they do. There's a reason why they've been asking that for so long. Larry King is also another one. Again, when you're part of these Barbara Walters, good, bad, or indifferent, right? They lean in and they're inquisitive and they understand what it is. Now, we can argue about their content and about certain things within the history of what it is that they've done. And no one is perfect. I truly believe that. But I do think that there is something to using the answer to lead the conversation.
And that's a lot harder than it appears.
Because I feel like
I'm always thinking about the questions that I have, the, what they're saying, and then thinking of the response.
For sure.
It's tricky.
It's a dance.
It is.
I mean, that's really what it is. It's an absolute dance. And just allowing yourself to be part of that dance, though, that is also led and followed, as opposed to it just being an interaction, right? And those, that I believe, you know, lends to just a really fun conversation and memorable moments that they are really evoked by, you know, people, both people paying attention and wanting to be there.
So I want to go back to This Is It for a little bit.
For sure. Please.
So you've had, you started that from the ground up.
I did.
You had to build an audience.
I did.
You then had to build an audience on all of these social platforms.
Yeah, for sure.
And as time went on and more social platforms started to come up, you had to put content out on those channels and then build audiences.
Yeah.
How did you do that? Yeah. And I saw now, I mean, I love watching you on TikTok. I mean, I might be, I might be slightly addicted. I love it.
Oh,
you have 57,000 followers on TikTok. And I know it's not all about the followers, but I mean, that's kind of impressive.
It is very fun.
And you have, three of your videos had over 1.2 million views. Two of them were almost close to 2 million.
I know.
Isn't How do you fun? Do that?
That it's kind of fun.
Tell us your secret.
Right. Well, I think it's just existing. I mean, I think that existing sounds kind of downgrades it, but it's just doing, to your point, you mentioned the authenticity, you mentioned kind of listening and feeling at home. I'm comfortable with who I am, so I kind of let people into whatever conversation that I'm having. I'm honest. You know, one of the other things is that very few people put out positive content, right? And so I think that by the time they get to me, they're thirsty for it, right? They're thirsty for a different perspective. They're thirsty. I believe that the majority of people are tired of being angry. I think they're tired of fighting with each other. They're tired of fighting with their neighbor. They're tired of being mad at strangers. I think they're just tired. And I think that what we need to do is to be able to share a little bit more of that educational entertainment, more of that fun. And so I allowed myself to put myself into a space that I truly didn't think we belonged. I mean, when it was Musical.ly and then it became TikTok. And, you know, again, my daughter is 13 years old. My son is six. My daughter was like watching these Musical.lys and her friends are doing these dances and lip syncing. I'm like, I do not belong here. I am not. This is not my space. Right. Like, I do not belong in this space. And then I, you know, started following hashtags and, you know, hashtag over 40, no judgment, hashtag mom TikTok, advice for women, all of those kinds of things. And I was like, oh, these are my people. And do they have, and these accounts that I followed, did they have millions of followers? No, but they were the right room for who it is that I was. And so I started just being really authentic to who I was as a person. And I say it in my recent book, and I say it always, is that you don't need a million followers to make $1 million. You don't need everyone following you in order for your message to resonate with the right people. And so I just showed up as myself, and the community that was there that wanted to that kind of content was able to find me. And I think that that was just really, really important. I put out content that our community on This Is It Network already would have enjoyed and hoped that some of them were online. Now, we don't do really much with X or really much with Twitter. We just, right now the commentary isn't as positive as I would like for it to be. So there's not really we're not building off of that platform, but I found really great friends and really great audience on TikTok. And so we're just pouring into them more often. And then Instagram and Facebook, those are the top three for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we're threading every now and then, and, you know, and that kind of thing. But yeah, yeah, I think that it's just a lot of trial and error. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't give themselves enough time to try things out to see if it'll work. I'm okay with, you know, us not going viral on Twitter or X. I'm okay with that. We don't have to be on everything in order to service our community. We just need to find the right things.
So one of the things you talked about in your book was about building a community. Yeah. That community is more than what you may think of as a general community.
For sure.
When you're putting out content, you're not just putting it out there. Yeah. You are engaging with people. Yeah. You are creating a space for them to be themselves.
Yeah.
How did you go about building community on all of these different channels? Is it the same community that's following you on each of these places? Or did you kind of have to start from scratch and build your people?
Yeah, I think that the fundamental is this kind of universal group of people. You know, I'm 46 years old as this is being recorded. So I fit into the demographic of women between the ages of 30 and 55, which tends to be our most, you know, the women that tolerate me the most, right? And because we're just shared in our life experience, right? We're shared in what it is that we're going through. So it's easy for me to talk to them because they're my friends. They're the people I went to college with. They're the people I played field hockey with. They're the people that I see and go to happy hour with or brunch. They're the people that I hang out with. So it's easy for me to start a conversation with them. I think when people are planning and creating their platforms, one piece of advice is to speak to yourself. Like there is another version of you, various versions of you, as opposed to fighting against or trying to claw and find who you aren't to participate and pay attention to you. Try to speak to you. Like, who would you be going out with on a Friday night? Who would you be hanging out with? What are your who are your classmates? Try to speak to them. It's an easier lift because as I get older, I don't age out of my own community. I just continue to talk to them. And so it's a lot different now than when you were hired as a host. You aged out of a program. Now, when you create your own program, you just take your community with you. And so things that affect me, early menopause or taking my kids to summer camp or, you know, not feeling so pretty today or being insecure, imposter syndrome, all the things that affect me on a day-to-day basis, those are topics for me to talk about to a community that sees and hears me because they are me. And so that's just a different way of kind of looking at it. I think a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know much about this and I'm going to start a channel about it. Like, what are we doing? Right? Like, start a channel about what you know and talk to, you know, an extended version of who you are.
I've never heard that advice before, actually. And it's so interesting because there's so many versions when we talk, you talk a lot about personal branding. Yeah. That is your shtick.
That's my thing.
That is your thing.
That's my thing.
Personal branding. But when I think about, you know, I was thinking about my own personal brand. Like, what does that look like for me? And, you know, people are dynamic and it's kind of hard sometimes to figure out, okay, what is your personal brand? Yeah. Because you have multiple hobbies. Sure. You have, you know, your career, you have your kids or your pets or whatever. There's so many facets to different people. So how do you decide, like, what, when you're figuring out what your personal brand is, how do you determine what that looks like for you when people are so dynamic?
Yeah. And I think that the beautiful thing is that so is everybody else. Mm. I think that what we think is that we have to be this one thing because everybody else is, everybody else equally has pets. Everybody else equally has a spouse or equally has work or equally has a partner or equal, all of those things. And I think that it's all based on how you deliver and departmentalize those things. In the book also, I share about, you know, the aisles of a department store or the aisles of Target. And what does that really look like? You know, I love Target, you know, sorry, I don't know if this is a sponsored post, but I love Target.
So do I
love to shop, right, in that way. I spend too much money that I adore but to spend all that money. But I spend too much money when I go in, but I'm never confused when I go in there. I'm never like, oh my God, this is so overwhelming because everything is in an aisle, right? And so they sell everything from baby food to lawnmowers, but you're never like, it's too much, I've got to leave. You're just like, point me in the direction of the baby food, point me in the direction of the lawnmowers. If we start to create our personal brand where we departmentalize our lives, when we say, okay, this is the lane or aisle for my parenthood. This is the lane or aisle for me as a fashionista. This is the lane or aisle me as a businesswoman. No one equally, including myself, gets overwhelmed, right? A lot of us will say, you know, I'm so much. I'm all over the place, which is what a lot of women say. I'm so all over the place. You're not.
I think I said that before, right, exactly. When I walked in this room today.
Right? So. You're like, I'm so all over the place. No, you're not. You're just, your life has different facets and you have different aisles of your target. And it's just about departmentalizing it so you can deliver it, right? And you can walk me through your store in a way that gets us all what it is that we want. And I don't think anyone teaches you how to do that. We just teach you to stay, pick one major mm-hmm. and stick in one major and do one thing. No one lives like that. Mm-hmm. And so once we embrace all that we are, we find that more people have more to them as well.
My biggest fear is that if I come online as one in one way, like mm-hmm. let's say I go on and I'm starting to talk about leadership and then all of a sudden I'm talking about my pets or something, you know, are people going to watch me for the leadership part? Are they going to care about my dogs or are they going to care about this other part of my life? Like, how do I know that's going to translate?
I think that it's about being honest. Mm. Say, lover of leadership, pets and life, whatever, whatever it is. Right.
I like that. Okay.
But be honest.
Yeah.
I love my dog. And I'm a good leader. Like, no one's going to be like, that sounds crazy, right? Like, they're not. They're just going to be like, okay, on here, she's going to talk about leadership one day. And we're going to see her walk her dogs equally talking about leadership on that day, right? Okay. And I think that when we try, I think, again, it's aisles of target. They never, ever claim to only sell one thing. They tell you, you're going to walk in here, you're going to get a lot of stuff. Figure it out as you go. We want to be like, I'm going to spoon feed them who it is that I am, mm-hmm. right? And then be like, oh, I never knew she liked dogs. This is so off-brand. Tell them that you love dogs from the moment that you meet them. So there's no surprise as it relates to them. And I think that that comes with being honest with your community and not trying to spoon feed who you are. We're all very complex people. We're all, you know, very layered people. So mm-hmm. give people an opportunity to know all that you are. I would limit it just from a personal consumption space to about three key elements of that you want to be able to share with your community. I also equally think not everybody is worthy of who you are, all of you. And so to overshare with people sometimes gets dangerous and exposes you to energy that you don't need. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to build a brand, concentrate on three verticals, you know what I mean? If it's business, if it's, you know, for me, it's women empowerment, it's business and it's, you know, personal branding or it's, you know, fashion or whatever it happens to be or lifestyle or just having a good time. You can feel that in my platform. You mm-hmm. can feel that in what it is that I put out into the world. It doesn't limit me. It kind of frees me to be all that I am.
Does everyone have a personal brand or, everybody has it. They might not know that they have it, but they have it.
Yeah, they might not know that they have it. And they might not know that how it affects them. You know, personal branding, by my definition, is what people say and think about you in your absence. Mm. So everybody has a way in which others think and feel about them. Being cognizant of that, and that doesn't mean you have to fake, and that doesn't mean you have to pretend to be someone else. Mm-hmm. It just means whatever it is you want in life should be equate to the brand that you put out into the world. So mm-hmm. if you want to be seen in a certain type of way and work in a certain type of arena or industry, then your personal brand should match. Mm-hmm. If it fights up against it, then it doesn't allow for you to be your best self. It doesn't allow for you, like prime example, like if you're an accountant mm-hmm. and you are a casual person and you don't want to work for the big five and you don't want to wear, you know, Navy every day and you don't want to be in a glass conference room downtown and in that space, then you can be an accountant for a really cool urban advertising agency and wear jeans all day or work mm-hmm. from home and be able to figure it out. You can still be an accountant. Mm-hmm. It just fits your different brand. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to fight against who you are naturally. And I think that especially those that are having a hard time with the job hunt and having mm-hmm. a hard time finding their place, what they've chosen to do is fighting against who it is that they are or the industry in which they look to support and what it is that they're doing is fighting against who they are. I think that people do so much of a better job when they're happy. Mm. And personal branding to me is very selfish. Mm. I shop a lot.
Mm. I consume, my kind of girl.
Right? I consume a lot. And we all know what it's like to interact with professionals who do not like their job. And so for me, I want to find more people who are aligned with what they do mm-hmm. so they can create and produce better products and better experiences so everybody can consume more things and like more things. I don't think that we realize the trickle-down effect of not having joy in who it is that we are mm-hmm. and not being in a good place and loving what we do and being able to convey that through our personal brand.
So do you think – your personal and your professional brand are one and the same, or are they kind of separate? Are you these two different people?
I think they're one and the same.
Okay.
I think that the way you show up for yourself should, in my opinion, you know, the way you show up for work. Now, do I use the same tone and voice when I'm talking to my West African parents than I do with my girlfriends from college that I do when I'm doing this interview? Right. Not necessarily. But the fundamental and foundation is the same. Mm-hmm. The dialect might be different, mm-hmm. but who I am as a person is the same. Loyal, authentic, trustworthy. All the things are the same. There's no faking. Mm-hmm. There's showing up in different situations in different ways, but who I am is the same. And I think that that's where a lot of people are missing. It's exhausting to pretend to be someone else. Mm-hmm. And you will get got at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And I think faking it, like one of the things I say, like we grew up on, or at least I grew up on the term fake it to you, don't fake it till you make it.
I read that in their book. That was excellent.
And that was the thing. It's like, fake it till you make it, fake it till you make it. And that was so ingrained in us. And that is a lie. Like, if I teach anybody anything, is like, don't do that. Do not pretend to be someone else. Mm-hmm. Come exactly as you are to this situation. Learn and grow and become what you need to be within the situation. But for you to literally start a relationship pretending lying, mm-hmm. You know, don't pretend to be a manager when you've managed no one. Don't pretend to be a director when you've directed nothing. It really puts you in a position where you're lying at the onset of a relationship when you can just simply say, I don't know that right now, but I'm definitely willing to learn. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, I'll hire you tomorrow. As opposed to you pretending to be someone and then disappointing me that the learning curve is off. I'd rather you say, I don't know that, but I'd really love to work with you and learn. Mm-hmm.
And I think too, you talk about this also in your book, but the self-awareness piece. Yeah, like for sure. Me, I realized, and this was a couple years ago, but I'd first gotten this job and yeah. I love dogs.
Yeah.
Big pit bull advocate. I've had tons of pit bulls in my life. I love them. Volunteer for the Humane Society, all about that.
I love that.
And I would share a lot of posts on social media of, you know, dogs needing homes. Yeah. And what started happening was I was getting messages from people saying that they were looking to rehome their dog, or they had an issue with training, or, and it was so weird to me because I'm like, why do they think that I have no idea. And I would say, like, you know, I'm a great connector. I can connect you to just about anybody, but I don't have the answer. And that was the first time I was like, wow, this is so interesting. Like the way that people are perceiving me 100%. Is by what I'm putting 100%. Out there and sharing.
100%.
And that is such a weird concept to grasp, because that's like a small, very small sliver of like who I am and what I'm about. And then also then I'm finding myself like, okay, what rescue can I get involved with now so that I have some
I have an obligation to my audience exactly. to be able to figure it out. But that's it. I mean, you are what you put out into the world. You are what you share. And I think, again, the internet was, you know, is a living, breathing thing. I mm-hmm. see it that way. And the more you feed her, the nicer she is to you. The more what you give her is what she shares on your behalf. And it's a choice. Again, Mark Zuckerberg isn't saying you have to post today or you have to post that picture. And I think that what I love to teach in personal branding is that we have the responsibility to ourselves to put out what we want for people to see. Mm-hmm. That can be anything. I don't really care. No judgment in what everybody wants to share. It's up to them. But understand the consequences of that. Understand the power of that, mm-hmm. right? So when you came across their feed, when, again, their feed they're consuming and they see you, they're associating you with the pit bulls and the dogs because that's what you're choosing to share. There's so much more to you, but if you don't share it, how would I know it?
Exactly.
How would I know that? So it's just us being an active participant in what our footprint looks like online mm-hmm. and really saying, okay, if I was in part of the book also, I ask people to audit their online mm-hmm. footprint, ask them to Google themselves. Because that's after I meet with somebody, again, personal branding is what people say and think about you in your absence. After I meet you at the cocktail party, at the networking event, at the, you know, at the concert, I'm going to Google you. Mm-hmm. And that's a natural reaction for the inquisitive. It's just to say for the curious, okay, who was that person? Let me learn more. And if you're telling me that you're a leader and all I see is dogs, mm-hmm. Is this the right person?
Exactly.
Does that connect? And, you know, the goal is to ensure that the information that you put online is consistent with the brand that you're building.
So when you're trying to brand yourself, there's so much content out there.
Yeah,
how do you set yourself apart from a lot of people who are trying to, who have similar goals and objectives as you probably do?
For sure.
It's really hard. I mean, yes, everybody is authentic and unique to themselves.
For sure.
I get that. But there's still a a piece, you know, you're going to have as somebody who's another, let's say there's another three other accounting marketers who are also in the leadership space who, you know, also love dogs, whatever.
right.
They have a similar community and similar objectives. How do you figure out what's unique to you?
Yeah. I believe we all have our own unique equation. I believe that, you know, who you are, what you want, and why you deserve it, and how you utilize that together to tell your story. I also think that we live in an abundant space where there's, you know, 6,000 versions of potato chips and 7,000 different bottled water, right? Like, I feel like, you know, if we were to get the analysis paralysis and stop moving forward because there is another version of us somewhere, we're never going to get to move forward. We're never going to share what we've got going on. I have a colleague that I love so much that also equally does personal branding. Her delivery is much softer than mine. You know, it's quieter. It's a little bit more poised, a little even more structured than mine. You know, those that work with her would not necessarily feel as comfortable working with me. And that's okay. And there's a reason why that's so good. I think that primarily in women in business and just small business in general, it's like, oh, somebody already does that. You know, in interviewing over 1,000 people in 1 week, I would have a woman that has a bakery, and then she would see that a bakery was just on and say, do you still want to interview me? You just had a bakery on. I was like, they don't have your grandmom's chocolate chip recipe. They're not located in Center City. They're not all of these things. And I think that what keeps us from moving forward is not really understanding and celebrating our uniqueness, just really being so fixated on what others have versus what we bring to the table. I know that that's hard. I know that that's difficult. I know that we're tempted to just hide. But really, you know, even going back to my TikToks, like the way that I deliver the same news or the same subject matter is different than the way somebody else does it. And maybe my temperament is consistent with what somebody needs in the moment. Maybe maybe the way in which I read something or the way in which the music that I add or even the subject that I talk about. And just really being confident in the fact that your uniqueness is enough and really trying to find the right rooms for who it is that you are. The other reason, big reason, is that a lot of people are doing the right thing in the wrong rooms, which is big for me and my personal branding education, is that you are in the wrong rooms doing the right thing and thinking that their reaction to you is your truth. When if you were in a different room, they'd be like, oh my gosh, I love what you're doing. And so many of us spend years trying to convince people as opposed to spending the same energy trying to find our people.
How do you know if you're in the wrong room?
They're not receiving it.
Okay.
They're not buying it. They're not paying attention. They're making you audition. They're making you tap dance. They're making you dance for your food, right? Like every day. Like my mom, a beautiful West African woman, she always used to say, stop going to the same well looking for different water, right? It's a definition of insanity. Yep. Stop doing the same thing over and over again, looking for a different result. And we do that. We're like, okay, if the TikTok just sounds like this instead, or if I just change the font on the PowerPoint, they're not going to buy it. Let's find our people. Let's find people, you know, my cookie is too expensive. Come on. Maybe you're advertising to people who have no money for that kind of cookie, who aren't looking for that kind of premier space. They're looking for fast grab and go cookies. Let them have that. Let's go find a more premium experience. Maybe you're more for special events. Maybe you're doing more weddings. Maybe you're doing more corporate giving, right? Corporate gifts. That's a more expensive cookie that requires a more expensive experience where you are selling them hot out of the bag, right out of a food truck. And that's your experience. Owning who you are and your brand position and what you bring to the table is what I want people to sit down with themselves and really begin to be like, okay, where do I want to be? What kind of stories do I want to tell? What kind of personality do I have? Because there's a lot of people who want to be that grab and go and that's their personality. And there's a lot of people that are like, absolutely not. I don't want to be in a festival selling cookies. I want to like softly wrap it with a ribbon and, you know, hand deliver it right out of the oven. That's a different, same cookies, different experience.
And having the confidence
to
be able to feel like an authoritative figure in whatever space you're in.
And own that.
Yeah.
I don't want to sell cookies at a festival. I want to sit down and have a luxury experience. owning that is difficult when all you feel you can do is sell cookies at a festival, right? And so beginning the conversation in a different way and then making sure that your product is consistent with the space that you want, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're saying you're a premier experience and if you're saying you want to charge, I don't know, $10 a cookie, then it needs to be a $10 cookie. Absolutely. Like there needs to really be able to provide and really put your, I guess, money where your mouth is in that regard.
So I think about this often. You know, 10 years ago, I was in a very different place than I am today.
Yeah.
And, you know, on my Facebook memories, I see like things that I said 10 years ago. And I'm like, oh, delete that. I don't even know. Can't even believe Facebook, you know, used to just put everything out there. I'm feeling blah today.
Right,
and I'm like, why would I say that? But anyway, I think about this in terms of like my your personal brand.
Yeah.
You know, in 10 years, you could be a very different person than you are today. So how do you adapt and rebrand yourself when your goals and objectives change?
Yeah. I think it's just like rebranding of any corporation. Reintroduce yourself to yourself. Reintroduce yourself to your to your community, right? I think that we think that people who follow us are literally living with us and they know what our objectives are. I didn't know you switched your job. Like so many people are being treated as you knew they knew you, not as you are, right?
Great
so
point.
Right? So if I met you and you were an assistant and I meet you 5 years from then, and now you're a director, I'm still like, can you get me a cup of coffee? But I'll have my assistant get you coffee, right?
Yes.
And it's not like, okay, I'll just have you. Okay, I'll get the coffee. No, I'll have my assistant get us coffee and then I'll just meet you in there. Okay, cool. Oh, do you have an assistant? Or, I just reintroduced herself to me, right? Mm-hmm. And give yourself an opportunity to do, as opposed to being like, okay, I'll get the coffee. Why is he treating me like I'm a coordinator? Doesn't he know I'm a director? You didn't reintroduce yourself. You need to take an active role in personal branding. Again, personal branding is a practice. It's something that you practice similar to positivity. It's something that you have to constantly not only be reintroducing yourself to others, but to yourself. We will retreat back to the muscle that's most comfortable, which tends to be the muscle which we started with, right? It's like, okay, all right, so am I a director? Am I CEO? Right? I went from like making these t-shirts in my basement. Now I have global distribution and I still want to press t-shirts in my basement. Is that a scalable skill for me? And how do I come to a meeting and demand to be seen as a CEO when I'm not behaving as one? Right? And so for me, for you, is that one, I believe, again, the internet is a living, breathing thing. The more you feed the internet more of who you are in the moment, that's more of what will show up, right? Things won't get erased, but when's the last time we went to the second page of Google, right?
Yeah.
Like, so just feed the internet more of who you are in the moment. So when people are Googling you after you do your audit, see what's out there. If you've changed jobs 3 times and that first job is the only one that shows up, that means you need to feed the internet more of where you currently are. And not to overcomplicate it, just put out more posts about what it is that you're currently doing. Remind yourself and others what it is that you're currently doing. And then when somebody searches you, that's what's going to come up. You know, I would love for this to be a more complicated act, but it's not. It's just put out into the world more of what you want for people to see based on the story you want to tell.
Like, it sounds like it's more of an evolution versus 100%. A, like, I'm just going to come out here, you know, and I think that's what it was like for my dog post.
Yes.
Where I was like, oh my gosh, like, these people do not know who I am. But then it took some time to figure out, like, okay, who am I?
Yeah.
And how do I want people to perceive me?
Yeah.
And who am I actually? Like, I want to make sure those two things, like we had talked about before, are aligned.
And it wasn't this complicated before.
Yeah.
Social media was a game. It was a social project. It was something that we got to see our nieces and nephews from all across the country. You got to post a picture of your burger. It didn't have such a magnitude that it has now. It was supposed to be a social experiment and a social project. Now it's a utility. Now
Absolutely.
It's a tool that you use to get what you want. And no one gave us the playbook or the rule book for this tool. And so that's just what I'm trying to do. Just really, really be able to address how we're using social now, how we're using online presence now, as opposed to how it originated.
Things have evolved and changed technologically. Ooh, we're seeing AI come to the forefront.
For sure.
How do you see that impacting your business? What do you see for your future?
Yeah. And so I'm excited about the future. I personally am a person that goes with advancements. Like I'm not still using the rotary phone and taking a horse and buggy to work, right? Like, we are moving with technology. And if you don't, you get left behind. It was funny. My students were asking me a while back, you know, did you always know that you were going to do what you were doing? I said, the truth of the matter is that when I graduated, what I was doing didn't exist. And so this notion that we have to have it all figured out, this notion that, you know, I could have never predicted I would own a digital streaming platform because that didn't exist as an option. Yep. And so for me to adapt and for me to constantly find tools to better have me serve, because that's really what it is. I serve my community by providing them with inspiring stories. And I use that to motivate and inspire them to get closer to their goals. That's all I want. And so the tools change. Mm-hmm. And as long as I adapt to the tools to, in order to do better at my job, I think we'll be in a really good space. The story I tell is that during the pandemic, my husband did a lot of home renovations and I was in charge of painting. So he built it and then I painted the thing, whatever that thing was, a lot of built-ins in our home. And the first time I painted it, it was awful. It was just, I stepped back and I was like, there were so many streaks, there were so many things. And I asked a girlfriend and I was just like, I don't know why I thought I was going to be a good painter. And she was just like, did you get this tool? Like, she's like, I painted the house, but I used this thing. And I was like, oh, I'm like, okay, I got it. And the room, chef's kiss, as they say. Amazing.
What and can't
it,
you do?
Right? Try me, right? But it wasn't about me. It was the tool that I was using, right? That made it better. And so if you're not able to evolve and use better tools to do a better job, then what are you doing, right? I could have painted that wall for days and it not be as good as the new tool that was available to me. So I like the idea of using new tools to create a better product. What I think is going to be interesting is because of AI and because of technology, it's really going to be about personalities and the personal experience will become a premium product. We already see it with Beyonce tickets and Taylor Swift tickets. These are very expensive things to get because you are witnessing a human doing work. And so what is going to happen is that live events are going to be a premium. Live interactions are going to be a premium. Where humans come into play, you are going to have to really see that as a premium experience. And how do we heighten the experiences in which we participate in? We're going to let AI, similar to like it's faster to get from point A to point B in a car than it is in a horse and buggy. We're just going to evolve in that way. But human interaction, I think, is going to be a premium. So events will be really big. Live entertainment is going to be really big as far as a profit center for people to get involved in. Conferences, trade shows, in-person learning, where online learning is going to be a standard. When you go and you meet and you learn in person, that's going to be a premium experience. And so I think that that's really exciting for those of us who educate and those of us who want to fill rooms and provide that kind of it experience, as I like to call it.
But then there are some tried and true tools like your book, Scream Your Dream. I can fully endorse it because I did read it. It is excellent. Oh, and I'm not just saying that because you're here. It really is excellent. One of the things that makes it really exceptional is the way that you have it written. It's in digestible small pieces
so that you
have actionable tools that you can really go back to, digest. Yeah. Your table of contents is so articulate. So you can go through and find exactly what you're looking for if you don't have the time to read the whole entire thing. Talk to us about the Scream Your Dream, why you wrote the book, what the general gist of it is for our audience.
It's 66 lessons to building your personal brand. I have given countless speeches and, you know, been an educator. And every single time it's, you know, cut the fluff. What do I need to do? Like, I am an avid, I love a good trade show, conference, recycled tote bag, logo tablecloth.
Me too.
Right?
You're
keynote
my people.
Speech.
Yes.
Logoed pen, like notepad, taking notes. And what always happened is that I would get so inspired listening to that keynote. And by the closer I got to the parking lot and the closer I got to my car, the enthusiasm kind of went because I wasn't given action steps. I learned how the person was in their car and then now they're not, right? They slept in their car. Now they're famous, but I don't know how to get there. And so what this was is understanding that digital space is a tool. I wanted to create a tool. This is a tool that you need for the novice person who isn't, you know, looking to take over the world, but just looking to be found and to be found accurately. Mm-hmm. And how can I give really simple bullet pointed instruction that is like, okay, if you want to do this, this is a really good guide. And so that's all it really was. I was tempted to write, you know, when I was 10 and one day I was, and I was like, listen, they just need to know how to have more people know about them today than yesterday. And what kind of lessons can I provide? So it's the ability to get started, the ability to get organized, and the ability to get active really underneath the Scream Your Dream umbrella. And it's just super fun. Everything section's broken down into 22 lessons. It's just easy, simple.
No fluff.
No fluff.
No fluff.
Do this, post this, be this. figure it out. And if you need me for more, you just let me know.
I love it. It's such a great book. All right. So lightning round, super quick.
Oh, okay.
All right. Greatest professional mentor.
Oh my gosh, my greatest professional mentor. And it's not in my industry. I think it's my mom. Oh. You know, so my mom was an educator, always been. And so she retired as a principal of an elementary school. And she's just one that arrives early, leaves late, knows everybody by name. Everybody knows her by name, right? The nurtured relationships, you know, we would go, well, still to this day, we'll go shopping in my hometown. And they'll be like, Miss Barlett, how are you? Students that she had when they were children, right? And those relationships are key, and showing up for people and really being present. So my mom is all things for me, regardless of the industry. I think that that's just the way people should behave.
What app can you not live without?
Right now, I'm in the TikTok, but I love a good Pinterest.
Okay.
I love a good Pinterest.
Interesting.
So I'm a pinner that doesn't do.
Okay,
right? So I don't. Right?
Me too.
I don't make, you know, a blanket out of my husband's ties, but I'll pin it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't make that salad, but I'll pin it.
Me too.
You know what I mean? I'm an aggressive pinner.
Okay. Interesting.
Right? I do my style inspo always comes from Pinterest. Like, okay. I love it. I don't create as many pins as I should, which I'm working on, but I love to have inspiration. I'm a visual learner. And so Pinterest is just a soft, beautiful, safe space. I feel like it's not noisy. I am a lover of all things magazines. Like, I love magazines and flipping through magazines.
Me too.
And I used to like just hide in like a Barnes and Noble during college and just daydream. And so Pinterest allows for me to have a digital version of that.
What is your best tip for making videos for social?
Oh my gosh. Just hit record.
That's it?
Just hit record.
Okay.
That's it. Just hit record. Pick a topic.
Okay.
And hit record. Instead of scripting yourself, give yourself bullet points.
Okay.
So this way you can riff. In between each bullet point, take a breath. Count to five.
Okay.
This way you can edit in between and then start over. If you make a mistake, stop. Count to five in your head and then start again. This way you have enough time to cut in between. So just hit record.
Who was your favorite interview?
Oh my gosh, my favorite interview? Under 1,000 interviews. And I know that this sounds cliche, but like, I just love the interviews where nobody knows who the person is. I love the interviews that I have to say, I mean, I'm willing and open to having as many celebrity interviews as possible. But ultimately, I really interview just people doing amazing day-to-day things. The nonprofit that only has 2 followers, the cookie place that only has 100 people, because the majority of people don't get into business to go viral, right? You don't, the cookie person doesn't start an Instagram to become an Instagram influencer. They start an Instagram to help sell them cookies. And so if I can find these, I just love the hunt of finding really cool people and turning people on to just really great people. And so that's just been really super fun. I've interviewed so many people. I can't necessarily just say one over another. Maybe if we chat again a year from now, that'll be a different story. But for right now, again, give me the undiscovered. Give me the undersaturated person that is doing remarkable things, and we'll have a great conversation.
I'm going to link Scream Your Dreams so that everyone listening can purchase your book. We really encourage you to do that because it is amazing. I'm going to link all your social channels. This is It Network. And they can find you on literally every platform.
Every platform.
So
you're so lovely.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Thanks. Sheldon took us on her inspiring journey from Sierra Leone, West Africa to CEO and executive producer. She shared how she was able to build community on her network and across her social media platforms. You don't need a million followers to make $1 million, but you do need to show up in the right places and spaces. She talked about the importance of authenticity, positivity, and embracing different parts of yourself when developing your personal brand and online presence. Join us next time as we continue to explore the principles of leadership with those who have lived it. Until next time.